Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Hello, friends. Happy Wednesday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. In just a moment, we're going to be joined by Paul Bredel. Before we get there, I did have one piece of news slash information that I wanted to go over that came out after I recorded with Paul. That is, the Packers can officially clinch a playoff berth this weekend, maybe. Well, it's complicated. It starts rather simple, right? All right, number one, there's three things that need to take place. Number one, Packers need to beat Seattle. Okay, that's a fair enough one. That's easy. Not easy. It's going to be a tough game, but that's easy enough. Packers beat Seahawks. Check. We're good there. Raiders beat Falcons. Okay, that's a little less likely to say the least, but Kirk Cousins has been pretty brutal lately. We could get a Desmond Ridder revenge game. Not impossible, not likely, but not impossible. All right, so that's number two. You mentioned, though, that there are three things that need to take place. The third one makes it rather impossible, and we'll know after Thursday Night Football whether this is actually possible or not, because the 49ers and the Rams on Thursday Night Football would need to tie. That is the only scenario in which Green Bay can clinch a playoff berth this week, is the Rams and the 49ers tie, the Raiders beat the Falcons, and the Packers beat the Seahawks. There are no other situations, no other scenarios. They need those three things to go exactly the way that we just defined them. And if anything else happens, they cannot clinch. So it is very unlikely that they could clinch a playoff berth, but not entirely impossible. Hey, I will say this. As far as I can remember, and looking at the standings recently, there has not been a single tie this season. So 49ers, Rams, do your thing. Come away with a tie. Green Bay can get that win against Seattle, and it may still be a little bit tough for that Raiders team to get a win versus the Falcons, but again, crazier things have happened. Not likely, but not impossible, and we'll kind of touch base on it maybe once more once we get to that 49ers, Rams outcome on Friday's show and see if we've maybe seen an update, but rather unlikely to say the least. Now let's get to our chat with the one and only Paul Bredel. We are joined by Paul Bredel. You can find him on ESPN Lacrosse. You can find him on social media at Paul_Bredel. Paul, it is great to be back chatting with you. Four games left in the regular season, a 98% chance to make the postseason, wild card in all likelihood. We've got a lot to get into, a lot to discuss, but before we get there, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm excellent, Andy. Always happy to be talking Packers with you. And like you said, it's crazy how fast these NFL seasons go. 4 weeks left in the regular season.
The blink of an eye. And like, before you know it, we're going to be talking about potential free agents and draft picks. And then all of a sudden it's going to be rookie mini camp OTAs. We're going to be doing it all over again. And just looking forward to these days where we actually have games again. And yes, Right now we've got four left, five obviously on the horizon with that first wild card game. And then hopefully a few more after that, but we'll have to see how this Green Bay team performs through the remainder of the season. So Paul, as we kind of usually start off, I will let you kind of go in any direction that you want. Obviously, we're a few days removed now from that Packers loss to the Detroit Lions, but what were some of your key takeaways, or maybe a key takeaway from that game that kind of is living with you rent-free in your head after we're still looking back at this a few days later?
Yeah, I'll go to the article I posted right after the game. And it was Matt LaFleur often says, and especially in these back and forth close games, these games are decided by a handful of plays. Like, really, that's what comes down to in those critical must have it moments. How do you perform? And we can look at third and fourth downs on both sides of the ball for the Packers as being, I mean, LaFleur said it afterwards, that was a big reason behind the outcome of this game. The Packers were just 1 for 5 on third downs in this game. And the fact that they only had 5 third down attempts, I think, tells us that they were finding success moving the ball on first down, second down, that they didn't even run into third downs all that often. And they didn't run a ton of plays either, relatively speaking. But on those third downs, those must-have-its, again, they were 1 for 5. And a lot of it throughout this game, we could kind of get a vibe of what was going to happen on the upcoming series by, all right, what happened on first down? Was it a positive play? Was it a negative play? Because when they got into those negative play situations, we're in second, third, and long down and distances, those were difficult for them to overcome against, again, an aggressive Lions defense who did a good job of taking away the running game. On the other side of the ball, Lions were 7 for 15 on third downs. And I think anytime you're around that 50% mark for third downs, that's among the league leaders in football. That's really efficient. And then we all know what happened on fourth down. Lions were 4 for 5 in that game, scored 2 touchdowns on fourth down. So for me, it was those critical must-have it situations. The Packers weren't able to stay on the field in those third downs. The Lions were. And the trickle-down effect of that is the Lions controlled the clock. They held the ball for almost 13 more minutes than the Packers. They ran 31 more plays on offense. And again, not to excuse the defense's performance. Ultimately, the results are the results. You got to come through regardless of what the situation is. But you're going against the highest scoring offense in football, and you're on the field for 31 more plays than what your own offense is. Like, that's difficult to overcome. And again, some of that's their own doing. They couldn't get off the field on third and fourth downs. But yep, that's the trickle-down effect of struggling in those critical down and distances. And they play hand in hand together, right? They're short possessions for the offense. You give the ball back to the Lions, they stay on the field for long possessions. So again, there's a lot of things that we can point to in this game. And I do have to say, if you weren't a Packers or Lions fan and were just watching as an outside spectator this game, you had to be loving what was unfolding.
Oh, yeah.
Really, really fun and exciting game to watch. Two heavyweights going at it. But for me, it all came down to those third and fourth down plays throughout the course of the game, added up and ended up being what I think was really the key difference in the outcome.
I totally agree with you. And it's such an interesting just sort of box score to go back and look at, because to your point, if you're trying to write up a script for Green Bay, right? Like that's not the script that you want. You don't want Detroit having 30 plus plays, controlling time of possession, converting the third downs and the fourth downs. Like that's going to be a recipe for disaster and just not a recipe for victory on the road against Detroit. At the same time, you can sort of look to a lot of the things that Green Bay did. They got a huge turnover. They got a huge turnover on downs. They really contained. I thought the two-headed monster in the backfield, Sonic and Knuckles, or Montgomery and Gibbs, if you will, Amon Ross St. Brown and Sam Laporta didn't really hurt you that much. Like, there's a lot of things that Green Bay did defensively too that went well in this game, but it was too much of those key moments. And when you, again, allow them to have the success rate on third down, and especially on fourth down, just back-breaking plays. And I thought, kind of the one that just sort of symbolized it all was the fourth down play where you're not lined up correctly defensively and Detroit goes tempo. You've got Amon Ross St. Brown in the backfield. You've got Jahmyr Gibbs lined up as a wide receiver, and they go tempo and Detroit gets up to the line quick, something that Green Bay had done on the previous drive to get Detroit off balance on tempo. And then they run the ball and Jacobs gets the touchdown run. Now Detroit says, oh, we can do that too. They go tempo and they line up the receiver in the backfield, the running back at wide receiver. There's a miscommunication. Is the wide receiver the running back or is the running back the running back? And you have this panic mode and all of a sudden Eric Wilson's not lined up where he's supposed to be. Keyshawn Nixon has to try to cover two things at once. He takes the flat, hoping that Eric Wilson is going to cover for him. But Eric Wilson then goes out in the flat because that's the guy he's supposed to have. And you end up with a guy wide open for a touchdown. And it's just those moments where it could completely alter the outcome of the game if you could just come up with some of those stops. They came up with one, and it did, for the time being, alter the outcome of the game because it got Green Bay the ball back in plus position. They go down and score the touchdown. They grab momentum back, but it just didn't feel like they could get enough of those stops when they needed them. And ultimately, at the end of the day, even after Green Bay took that lead, Detroit marches down, gets the touchdown. They march down again for the game-winning field goal with very little resistance. And while there were some good things that Green Bay did, it just wasn't enough. And those clutch and key moments is really the difference.
Yeah, and obviously the defense gave up the 34 points. We talked about couldn't get off the field. But as you mentioned, they had their moments too. Like early on, as the Packers went 3 and out on their first two possessions, had the forced fumble. Like it felt like that game could have been 17-0, 21-0 very easily in the early going. Like the defense allowed the offense to hang around going into that second half where they came out with the quick score. Then Keyshawn Nixon came away with the interception. They had the fourth down stop that the offense was able to capitalize on. So there were good things that happened in this game, but Matt LaFleur talked about it on Monday. When you're going against just a team of that caliber, it's consistency. That's what you need against the Lions, the Vikings, the Eagles, you know, the top teams in the NFC, because you don't know, as LaFleur said, you don't know when those key moments, those key plays we talked about, are going to occur within the game, right? They just present themselves in the moment. And in order to take advantage of those situations, to be the one who comes out on top, you have to be operating at a consistent level, down to down, series to series, and particularly defensively in this game, the first half for the offense, that's again where the Packers were, they were lacking, right? That's still something that they're trying to, we see so many bits and pieces of it here and there that they're still trying to work together, to orchestrate, to put together down this final stretch. So those pivotal moments, but I think there's plenty of positives that we can take away from this game as well. I guess here's one other big thing. Which I'm assuming most did. If you felt good about the Packers going into this game, they'd won 7 out of 8. Like, you should still feel good about this Packers team. They're a good to really good team right now, but at the moment, the Lions are better. And again, that showed in those critical moments, the consistency of the game, how they operated.
Greatness is really tough. Like, it is very tough to be a consistently great football team. Right now, Detroit is finding ways to be that consistently great football team. Green Bay is still searching for that. And there's no question, like, Green Bay is a top five, top six team in this league. They can compete with anyone. They can go out and beat the Lions. They could get, like, you play that game 100 times, like, Green Bay's coming out with a decent chunk of wins. If you play that out, you know, Detroit's coming out with more of them, but Green Bay can win that game. But yeah, being consistently great and finding that consistency and that stability on all phases of the game, that's something that is tough to do in the NFL, and Green Bay's still searching for it. But to your point, If you felt good going into that game, you should still feel really good about this team. There's a lot of things that you can kind of hang your hat on and still see as positives and reasons why Green Bay could make a run as they get into this final stretch of the season. Sticking with the defense and maybe a couple of the concerning points as we kind of keep an eye on the remainder of the season, I think first of all is the secondary issues right now. And a lot of this has to stem from injuries, but this is kind of the first time we're seeing injuries really kind of start to pile up on Green Bay and cause some problems. Right now in the secondary alone, Jaire Alexander has not been playing, of course. You've got, you know, Corey Ballantyne, who's been out. Now you've got Javon Bullard and Evan Williams, who are both dealing with issues. Javon Bullard labeled week to week. Evan Williams has got a concussion issue. And all of a sudden you end this game with Keyshawn Nixon, Eric Stokes, Carrington Valentine, Zane Anderson, and Xavier McKinney. And it doesn't exactly have that same oomph and emphasis as it had when you had your full, you know, depth and all of your starters out there. So this is something that I think is concerning. And I also think even with some of, like, the starters in there, there's still some Eric Stokes stuff that is not going great. Carrington Valentine has not taken that that jump. Keyshawn Nixon has been a little bit up and down. So there do seem to, you know, finally be some cracks in that secondary that are kind of showing themselves.
Yeah, and I think it caught everyone's attention as well when Evan Williams exited the game. It was Zane Anderson who they called upon. I tweeted this out after because I immediately thought back to the Jacksonville game where Williams exited that game early. Bullard was moved to safety and took his lumps, to put it lightly, in that game. And the few days later when Jeff Hafley was speaking, he talked about, one, just for any player, going from the slot to safety in the middle of a game is a big transition because, again, these guys, if you're the slot cornerback in practice with the first team defense, that's what you're practicing throughout the week. Yes, Bullard has the versatility to play safety, but he's not taking free safety reps in practice. So in that Jacksonville game, all of a sudden he's being asked to play a position that he didn't really prepare for throughout the week. And again, that's normal. So the Packers opted for continuity. They opted to keep Bullard in the nickel. They opted to keep Keyshawn Nixon on the boundary and went to Zane Anderson. LaFleur said after that first possession, and maybe some jitters in play, but settled in, executed his responsibilities as needed, and he came up with that, you know, big, at the time, big tackle on 3rd and 1 on that final possession. But yeah, the injuries are obviously a big concern, and the big one, you know, obviously all these are worth watching, but if Evan Williams remains in concussion protocol, they could potentially go to Zane Anderson to start, and we could be looking at a secondary, again, depending on Jaire's status, Bullard's status, where it's Nixon in the slot, Stokes and Valentine out wide, and then you got Zane Anderson on the back end. So obviously very much worth watching. And the cornerback position, what's interesting to me is it's not as if these guys are giving up a ton of downfield plays, right? Like, if you go look at that yards per catch, like, Keyshawn Nixon's giving up fewer than 10 yards per catch this season. I think Stokes is actually under 11. I think in 5 of 7 games, Valentine has held pass catchers to around that 12 yards per catch mark. Like, that's not going to hurt you. That's not going to be incredibly detrimental. But what is if you go look at the completion percentages, Nixon, Valentine, Stokes, they're all in like that 65, 70% range. And I know Nixon just had the interception, but relatively low on ball production as well. And while, yes, in a nutshell, if your cornerback's giving up 10 yards per catch, that's not going to burn you. Well, that's a first down, especially when you're giving that up on average, roughly 3 out of every 4 times you're targeted.
Yeah.
So that's where the big issue for this group lies. And when we talk about not being able to get off the field on third downs, I mean, that's, again, 8, 10, 11 yards. That's all it takes, obviously, to pick up the sticks and keep moving down the field and putting yourself in scoring position like the Lions did the other day.
And to add 2 things on top of that, number one, it's one thing if you've got one of those guys on the field, right? Like if your other 2 corners are pretty shut down and not allowing you easy completions and are, you know, making everything contested, okay, you can probably get by with one of those guys that's not getting beat deep, but might have a higher completion percentage against them and is giving up those 10, 11 yard passes from time to time. Only you have 3 of them on the field and you don't have any of those guys being shut down guys, that's going to become a much bigger problem. And then add on top of it, a pass rush that is not getting home consistently, which is making things harder for all of those guys in the secondary that do allow a high completion percentage. And then you have a recipe for disaster. And then you can even take it a step further. And what I kind of want to talk about next is the linebacker issues, who are there. That position is specifically also having some troubles in coverage, and they are allowing a lot of passes to be completed over the middle of the field. It's not just the linebackers, it's the corners. It's kind of everyone in that middle of the field that's kind of making it an issue. But all of a sudden, you have the makings of, and to be fair, Jared Goff, Tua Tagovailoa, 2 of the best over the middle throwing quarterbacks in the NFL. They're both very, very good at it, but you can see the weakness and you can see, I would expect teams to sort of copy and paste it and be like, all right, if Detroit and Miami can have a lot of success over, we're going to test the same area. We're going to run a lot of screens. We're going to run a lot of intermediate inbreakers and dig routes. Like, I would expect a lot of teams to have a similar game plan going forward, and Green Bay is going to have to find a way to stop it.
Yeah, and we all know the obvious impact that Jaire Alexander brings, but again, the trickle-down effect of him being on the field is, you know, maybe you give Xavier McKinney more ability to lean towards a Stokes or a Valentine, right, on the opposite side to provide some additional help. At the linebacker position, not having Edgerrin Cooper, I mean, McKinney has talked about just, and we see it, his speed, his athleticism, but with that at the linebacker position comes versatility. There's more flexibility for Jeff Hafley game planning and how he utilizes Cooper, and also how that impacts what the safeties do, right? Because if he knows he has a linebacker that can cover more ground, that gives you, again, more flexibility on the back end and how you utilize the safeties. There's more space you can cover. So again, we know what these guys can do individually, Cooper, Alexander, others, but it's the trickle-down effect of them being on the field and how that impacts everyone else around them, how that impacts the entire game plan that I think we're seeing the ripple effects of. And as far as the linebacker position goes, when Cooper popped up on the injury report, the hamstring injury that was going into the 49ers game, I believe, wrote about the linebacker position, because again, that's an offense that likes to attack the middle of the field, can really stress the linebackers. And in the article I wrote, I really thought it was going to be a by committee approach when in nickel. Obviously, Quay, your Mike, your middle linebacker, always out there. But I thought in more obvious running situations, we would see Isaiah McDuffie. The more obvious passing down, you'd see Wilson come in those situations. But it's been a lot of Isaiah McDuffie, and Tua, Jared Goff have been really picking on him. I forget what it is. Has he been targeted like 20 times over these last 2 games? Like, they are going at Isaiah McDuffie. So that was one thing at the linebacker position I did think we would see differently. And again, I'm not saying having Eric Wilson in there would have been a cure-all for the passing game over the middle, but I am surprised by that, because again, you look at their skill sets, Wilson's more the pass defender, McDuffie's more the run defender, but he's been out there in a lot of passing situations.
Hey friends, we are smack dab in the middle of holiday season, and there's only one thing better than the spirit of giving, and that's the spirit of winning. And right now you can make your holidays bigger and brighter with Prize Picks, the absolute best place to get real money action while watching your favorite sports. This holiday season, Prize Picks is giving away 2 free picks in December, and they're giving away $30+ million in rewards during Picksmas. Sign up today and get $50 instantly when you play $5. You don't even need to win to receive that $50 bonus. It is guaranteed. Now, do you think James Cook is going to have more than 60 yards next week? Joe Burrow, more than 1.5 touchdowns? Whatever you think, Prize Picks is the best way to win real money this football season, and you can turn your sports opinions into real money in fewer than 60 seconds. This week, I'm going with a huge bounce back week for Jaden Reed after catching zero passes last week. Don't see that happening again. I'm also going with Brandon McManus to make multiple field goals on the road in Seattle. I'm also going to be keeping an eye on Josh Allen versus the Lions as well. Whoever you want to pick, make sure you download the app today and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup. That's the Prize Picks app using code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after your first $5 lineup. What are you waiting for? Prize Picks. Run your game. Hey everyone, with the holidays creeping up faster than your great aunt's fruitcake recipe, I've got something way better to share with you. If you want to look sharp for all those festive gatherings and maybe finally win that best groomed at the family dinner award, check out the latest masterpiece from Manscaped, the Chairman Pro Electric Foil Shaver. Trust me, it's like Rudolph for your face, guiding you to a smooth, irritation-free shave. Head over to manscaped.com and join the over 11 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped by using code PACKADAY for 20% off plus free shipping. Now, you may have recently seen Mustache Andy lately. It was a beautiful sight to behold, and that wouldn't have been possible without the Chairman Pro's Flex Adjust technology, which is basically like the holiday miracle of shaving. And when I needed even more precision to get that mustache look just right, there was the Precision Lock. And when you lock it in, the blade head sits firm so you can achieve a more precise shave, and that's exactly what I did. So get the Chairman Pro today and experience a shave that is as smooth as you deserve. Get 20% off plus free shipping with code PACKADAY at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code PACKADAY at manscaped.com. What are you waiting for?
I am slightly surprised that Jeff Hafley has not had more, let's just say, options and more just unique, maybe, solutions. I kind of would have expected in maybe some of these situations when you get into nickel and you need a pass defender, like maybe a Ketan Oladapo, like cross-training somebody there to give you an extra player in there that, you like, we saw Jamal Adams, who like the Lions literally picked up during the course of the week. And added to the practice squad and elevated him for game day, a known safety. He's in there playing linebacker. And you heard Matt LaFleur talk about how they treated him as basically a linebacker, but he was a former safety. And again, it just gives Detroit a little bit of a flexibility where you have this former safety in the box and you can do some unique things with them. When we heard Jeff Hafley initially kind of come out in his press conferences and talk about putting players in positions to be successful and kind of planning on things week in and week out and changing the game plan dependent, like, to me, and I'm not saying like maybe even McDuffie or Wilson shouldn't be your primary nickel linebacker still, but if you're in a nickel and it's like a third and 15 or something like that, and it's a very obvious passing situation, to me, getting somebody like a Ketan Oladapo, and again, we have no idea what Oladapo's shown in practice or on, you know, understanding defensive concepts, or that we have no, he could be just well behind the eight ball and just not ready for that whatsoever. But just giving something, whether it's maybe it's another, maybe it was it's Zane Anderson in that situation before the injuries, or maybe it's Javon Bullard getting that opportunity, whatever it might be, just giving yourself a few more options of players who could play in some of those scenarios. Because to me, you know, even in like the goal line situation, getting Isaiah McDuffie one-on-one, you know, with Jahmyr Gibbs in space where he can run to the flat or run that Texas route, you're just in complete no man's land in that situation. And I joked with Justice Mosqueda yesterday of like, I'm not sure there's any Packers linebacker in the history of my time being on this earth that I would have trusted necessarily in that scenario, much less Isaiah McDuffie. But I was maybe hoping for a little bit more creativity and just a few more options defensively that they could go to in some of those situations.
Yeah, I think part, especially the Lions game, I think what we're seeing is a first year defensive coordinator who's still navigating his own learning curve, right? And the type of adjustments to make, how to respond in certain situations. And again, on the other side of that football is Ben Johnson, right? Like someone who can make has made a lot of defenses out there look silly. So I think that's part of, again, what Hafley's navigating, again, as a first-year coordinator in a lot of instances and situations that are new to him in this role, because this is his first time as a D coordinator at the NFL level as well. Yep. So I think that's part of, we talk about the players learning curve. I wrote about this last week and them getting comfortable within the defense. Well, he's still going to be experiencing that as well from a play caller's perspective and how he puts the game plan together, how he adjusts, how he attacks certain defenses. So I do think that that's part of this equation as well.
Let's go over to the offensive side of the ball. I know you wrote about Christian Watson and his emergence over the course of the past few games. Yes, there's been a drop. Yes, there was a fumble, but we're also seeing the explosiveness of Christian Watson on full display. He is becoming, we know he's a playmaker, but he's really shown that playmaking ability over the course of this last handful of games. What have you seen from Christian Watson, what he's been able to add to this offense lately?
Yeah, and as far as the drop, at least by PFF's metrics, and it was the San Francisco game, that was his one this season that,
yep,
that they've charted. That's, I don't have any off the top of my head if there are more.
No, it's just that one and only two last year. So like I was talking about this the other day. I forget, I think it was Perry and Grant, of like how Christian Watson has this drop, right, persona or whatever, like people put it on him, but three drops in the last 2 years. You know, Jaden Reed's got nine so far this year. So he's kind of not been the guy that you have to worry about when it comes to drops, actually.
Yeah. And the fumble was the first fumble that he's lost in his career as well. So those plays, again, not downplaying, I'm not saying that, you know, obviously you don't want them to happen, but in this stretch out of the bye and over the course of the season, those are the outlier plays for him. Like, he's catching 61% of his passes this season. Since the bye week, he's caught 10 passes for 331 yards. 331 yards on 10 receptions, 33
pretty
yards
good
per catch. Absolutely insane. Catches a 60 yards, 46 yards, 59 yards. And I don't think he's found the end zone, but he sparked a lot of red zone visits. He sparked a lot of scoring drives. And one area where he's really improved this season is on contested catches. PFF has him at 70% contested catch rate this season versus 33% a year ago. So we're seeing development in that aspect of his game, but he's provided that big, what we know he can do, that big play presence for the offense. Like I said, it sparked a number of red zone trips, scoring drives for this Packers team, and where I think there's more opportunity for him, and we're starting to see it a little bit, that insane throw from Jordan Love on the crossing route, the 60-yard catch and run against the Bears at the end of the game, a crossing route. I really think getting him more involved on some of those intermediate crossing routes, getting him in space, I think there's more, even more opportunity out there for him moving forward. But he's provided the juice, he's provided the spark for this Packers offense. And again, not to say that there aren't ups and downs, Christian Watson will always be the first to take responsibility of where he can be better. But for an offense that's been searching for some consistency, they've been able to generate big plays, but he's provided stability, consistency, and again, that big play element of it. I know on your grades you had negative. Was the fumble, if you took the fumble out of the play, is it a pretty positive game?
Or it would have been a positive grade without the fumble too. I'd have to go back and look at it. I think there was something else too, but obviously having the big play down the field, obviously having the crosser that went for the 20 plus yards before the fumble was good. I think there was a couple blocking plays that graded in the negative off the top of my head, but yes, it would have been a positive performance for Christian Watson had it not been for, unfortunately, it was a pretty big fumble in that game. And, obviously just taking that momentum away early on, punt fumble early in the game was a pretty big, kind of game changer. But yeah, outside of that, he would have graded in the positive.
And I've talked about it on here, I think, countless times. When he's putting up these kind of numbers specifically, he already has the attention of defenses. Like, they are going to be focused on him. So that's going to open up opportunities for others over the middle of the field, underneath routes, because of the spacing he helps create, because of the gravity of pulling defenders for him. So I said it before, when Christian isn't getting the ball, there is a positive impact that he can still very much have on this offense just by being on the field. And that effect is going to be magnified moving forward, because again, he's putting up some ridiculous numbers right now with it that certainly is going to garner more attention.
Yeah. And those big plays on the outside are such difference makers. And I mean, he just blows right past Carlton Davis on that play. And you just, that's not something you see very often, and just the pure speed that he has. And then again, his ability to convert that into a big play, it makes that throw really easy for Jordan Love, because he has so much separation. And then to your point, he's coming up with contested catches. And more often than not, he does all the little things as well, including being a big time blocker and not somebody who goes back to the huddle and is demanding the ball and being a, you know, bad teammate and being like, I'm open, give me the ball every time. Or like, he's just, hey, whatever you need from me, I'm good. And I think that's something that when you have a lot of mouths to feed on offense is really important. And when he gets his opportunities, for the most part, he has made the most of them. And yeah, 30 plus yards per catch is pretty darn good on 10 receptions. That big time playmaking ability is something we know this Green Bay's offense really is predicated on and really wants to make happen. But Christian Watson's doing it at a very high level right now. With that, though, you all of a sudden see now the conversation of, all right, now Christian Watson's involved, but is Jaden Reed getting involved enough? And again, I think the overarching point that we talk about all the time is, we can have this conversation every week. If you know, there's going to be two players that usually get fed every week, and there's going to be a few other players that are left wanting a little bit more, and we could have this conversation every week, but it has been a little bit of an extended period for Jaden Reed where we haven't seen the same level of production. I'm not even necessarily so much focused on that. It's weird that this offense is sixth in points, or this team is sixth in points scored. Obviously, there's been some defensive plays in there too, but they're sixth in points scored on the season. They're a very good offense. They're, I believe, still top five in DVOA offensively. Yet for me, and you can obviously feel free to disagree, it feels like they still haven't found that perfect chemistry on offense. And I know Matt LaFleur is going to be the first to say every game's a little bit different. I think we hear that out of him on just about every single press conference of every game's a little bit different, and they're going to have to try to do different things and focus on different players, which I totally get and totally agree with. It's something I've said in the past as well, that each game has its own identity and you have to play to the identity of that game. But it's still, to me, feels like they haven't exactly found that perfect calculus yet of what's the right measurements of, you know, in you know, formula of Josh Jacobs that you're adding to it. What's the right amount of Jaden Reed and Tucker Kraft? How do you get Dontavian Wicks and Romeo Doubs and Christian Watson involved in that? And then, you know, Chris Brooks and Emmanuel Wilson and Ben Sims and all these other guys. Like, it just always still feels like just a degree off, and it's not far, and they're still putting up points, and it's, you love to see all those things, but it just hasn't totally felt completely cohesive yet. And it feels like it's getting closer and closer, but do you feel like they're there? Is there still a little ways to go offensively for them?
I think there's still ways to go, because we've seen, like, the previous 2 weeks, the 49ers game, the Dolphins game, even the Bears game, like, Josh Jacobs, the run game, was the catalyst behind those performances, even against Miami, where he wasn't, you know, wasn't picking up 4 or 5 yards per rush, but it was the catalyst for that offense. And I think that helped create some more efficient opportunities for the passing game. Then against the Lions, who came into that game and said, we're not going to let you run the ball. I think next-gen stats had 9 of Jacobs' 18 rushes were going into a heavy box. It was on, and the offensive line was struggling early on as well. It was on the passing game to pick up the slack. And I think for me, that's the most encouraging part of that game, because in those tight performances, like we saw, you know, a close game, I should say, like we saw against the Lions, at least off the top of my head, and let me know if something comes to mind for you, I couldn't really picture a performance where, you know, it's a close game and the passing game is the one who has to do the heavy lifting for the offense.
Yeah.
They put up a lot of yards and some points coming back from behind the Vikings. They put up a lot of yards against the Lions the first time, but again, different game when it's 24-3 or 28-7 versus, all right, it's a close game, it's tied, we got the lead, we're down a score. The passing game had to come through in those moments, and they were able to. And for me, that's the most encouraging part of it, again, because we just hadn't quite seen that, at least not for an extended period like we did during the second half against Detroit. I think Love was 9-for-13 in the second half, 175 yards passing. And the offensive line started to shore up a little bit more in that second half. And that's an aggressive Lions defense. They're physical. They play a ton of man coverage. But if you can give Jordan Love time, the Packers receivers that they have, like, the Packers are going to welcome those type of situations every time. So it's good to see them capitalize on it. Now, what you want to see is all that come together, right? That's the missing element. We see the run game rolling. We see the passing game rolling. Now, can we get that together? And that's where this group is just truly has that almost unstoppable ability, right? Like, if you're a defense and you're gonna, like, all right, we gotta take away Josh Jacobs, well, now there's, you're shorthanded in the secondary, there's more one-on-ones, all right, we gotta provide more help on the back end, all right, now you're giving Josh Jacobs light boxes to run into. So that's, I think, what the Packers are chasing right now, is just that complementary football within the offensive side of the ball. And we've seen both elements going, and that's why I think they're certainly going in the right direction. And like we talk about, the goal by the end of the season is to be playing your best football. I think they're on that trajectory, still with some ways to go yet, but But being able, the passing game, to be able to shoulder the workload, if you can couple that again with Josh Jacobs finding success, I think really sky's the limit for what this offense can be.
I think so too. I'm still so bullish on what this offense can be. And again, we haven't even seen it totally click. We've seen Jordan Love not be 100% healthy. We've seen Malik Willis, and they're still sixth in scoring offense. And it still feels like there is so much more meat on that bone and so much more that they can get to, that I'm excited about it. But I would like to see them kind of put that together for a game, just to kind of see, oh, yep, they can do it. And that's what it looks like. It's hard. I mean, the NFL is difficult. Defenses are really, really good at taking away what you want to do. I was a little bit surprised that Green Bay struggled as much as they did to open this game. It felt like maybe they were a little bit tight at times. Mm-hmm. You know, how Detroit handled that Green Bay rushing attack and really just stacking the box and kind of daring the Packers to win on offense. Were you a little bit win on the outside with the passing offense, I should say. Were you surprised at all with how Detroit kind of played that game? Is there anything that you think that teams can kind of copy and paste from that approach? Or do you feel like, you know what, Green Bay kind of figured it out in the second half. They knew how to, you know, take advantage of it, and they'll be more prepared for it moving forward.
I could see teams trying to replicate that to the extent of, all right, we want to take away or limit as much as we can Josh Jacobs in the run game, just because the importance of, not just against the Packers, but any team, of being able to limit the opponent on the ground game. But my hope is that after the Packers experiencing this and we see them making the adjustments or finding more success against it in the second half, that if that happens again, we see in real time a much quicker, right, change and adjustment.
Agreed.
Adjustment to it, because I think that was the big thing for it. It just took a little bit too long, and they came back. They obviously took the lead, so it didn't totally debilitate them and take them out of the game by any means. But obviously a different dynamic when you're trailing 10-0, 17-7. So I would just hope that, I think the Packers could make those adjustments or, you know, changes in real time quicker the next time that they do see that approach. But I do think, again, that's the challenge for if you're in a defense, because kind of what are you going to try to take away? But trying to make the run game at least shorthanded at least gives you the opportunity to make the offense one dimensional at that point.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I could have said it better. I think they learned from it. And I think these are sort of the challenges that you have to go through in season so that it prepares you for the postseason. And I think they're going to be much better prepared if a team kind of attacks Green Bay in that way, and getting to some of those man beaters and those one-on-one opportunities for Christian Watson, and getting to some of that stuff a little bit sooner. Because as Matt LaFleur said, they were basically daring them to throw the ball and they were able to take advantage of it. But it wasn't really until kind of the second half when they started taking advantage of it a little bit more. And you would have liked to have seen those transitions made maybe a tiny bit earlier. All right, let's get to Packers Seahawks. What are you kind of looking forward to in this one? What are you excited to watch? And what do you think is going to be kind of the keys to this game?
I think what we just talked about is a perfect segue into what I'm going to be watching for. The Seahawks are giving up 4.7 yards per rush this season. That ranks 25th in the NFL. We just talked about the importance and needing to see this offense get things going from a complementary standpoint between the run and passing game. It's been a stingy secondary that the Seahawks have, but I think the opportunity is there to get things going on the ground game early, open up opportunities on the back end to then pair that with some downfield opportunities and some explosive plays in the passing game. So, like I said, we've seen the run game find success those 2 weeks prior. We saw the passing game shoulder the workload. I want to see that come together to some degree here against the Seahawks. And I mean, it's going to be a on the road against Seattle, winners of 4 in a row. I mean, this is going to be a tough, tough environment that the Packers are going to be going into, and going to have to be obviously executing at a high level in all aspects.
I maybe I'm alone in my feeling on this. I love the fact that Seattle's won 4 in a row and they have this really tough road game coming up against Seattle in a place that's a tough place to play. I love that the Saints have won 3 of their last 4. I love that they have to face one of, quite frankly, the best teams in football on the road in the Minnesota Vikings, a team that went up on them 28-0 earlier in the season. I love that that final game is against Chicago, in a game where you want to continue that, what is that, 11-game winning streak right now against them and try to make it 12th overall. And like, that's one of those games that regardless of record, you always want to win no matter what. So I kind of low-key love how this schedule has sort of shaped up, considering the fact that Green Bay is 98% chance to get into the playoffs, that they're likely going to be a wild card no matter what. Like, I think these are going to be games that really test some of the things that the Packers have struggled with overall, getting off to early starts, playing better on the road, you know, being better in finding some of those solutions earlier in games, not getting behind, like just some of the things that they have struggled with, I think are going to be tested in these games. And I think that's exactly what I want, because as we know, Paul, they're going to have to go three consecutive games on the road in the playoffs in all likelihood and get those wins in the wild card if they want to get to where they want to go, which is, of course, to the Super Bowl. I love the way that this schedule shapes up right now. Now, you don't want it where all of a sudden they have a must-win game in that final game against Chicago, and it's like all of a sudden like, oh, God, like Chicago could potentially knock Green Bay out if they come up with some crazy upset win or something. We don't want it to get to that point, but I love that they're going to be challenged, and I love that they're going to have to kind of play some good football where they can't just mail it in and be like, yep, we'll just kind of coast until we get to the wild card round. I think there's going to be some really good challenges along the way.
Yeah, I mean, look at last season, the playoffs. When did that start for the Packers? Week 15, week 16 last year? Yeah, that was also such an important part of the success that we saw at the end of the season and into that Dallas game, and you know, having an opportunity at the end of the 49ers game as well to go to the NFC Championship. As Gutekunst said, one of the biggest goals is playing your best football at the end of the year. So the fact that the Packers have these difficult matchups upcoming, you know, there really isn't that, not that they would, but there really isn't a take your gas, you know, foot off the gas moment, right?
Yep.
Even though they are probably locked into a playoff spot, locked into a wild card spot. So there's that opportunity to continue to test yourself. So when you come to playoff time and you run into maybe some of these unpredictable moments or obviously facing good teams, these aren't unfamiliar moments for you either. You've been there. You know how to respond in those situations because that's such a big part of it. I mean, we just talked about it in the Lions game, the importance of what if Green Bay had responded to how Detroit defended them a bit quicker. Does that impact the outcome of the game? So again, having these moments, these learning opportunities now is when you want to have them. Obviously not in January. You want that to be, all right, we've been here, we've done this, now let's go and execute it before. Kind of like with when Malik Willis came in during the Jaguars game. I mean, Tucker Kraft said to everyone, he's like, hey, we've done this before, we've been here before, let's go do it, right? There wasn't any surprise, hesitation of, oh, the backup quarterback's in. They knew what to do because they had been there. That's what you want come playoff time, because opponents are going to throw different things at you. They're going to hit you in the mouth, but it's all about how you respond in the moment. So having these challenging, difficult tests now is just going to better prepare you for those moments.
I'm such a huge believer that you have to have those learning moments through the course of a season. You have to have some of your weaknesses exposed. You have to figure out ways to mitigate them and overcome them. And I think you hit it right on the head of like, just even when you have a backup quarterback coming in, of like, oh yeah, this is no big deal. We've won with Malik before. We can do that again. Or like, just again, oh, we've been down to some teams before. We're able to come back and win them. Or, you know, we can go on the road. And I think that's why the Seattle and Minnesota games are so huge. Like just having that faith that like, oh yep, you can go on the road in a tough environment against a playoff caliber team and come away with wins, because you're probably gonna have to do it three times. That's why I love having those matchups coming up, because I want to see Green Bay go into Seattle, go into Minnesota, and show that they can win these tough road games, because they're going to have to coming up. So I think these are all great learning lessons for what is still the youngest team in football, who is still going through some of the growing pains of learning how to be a great team in this league. We know that the talent is there. Now, can they put it all together? Anything else that you're looking for from this team in the final four games as they do sort of get ready and prep for the postseason, and anything that you'd like to see them do? Like, is it job number one still get wins, get into the playoffs? Do you want to see this team focus on like, hey, it's a 98% chance. If guys are beat up, like literally give them as much time as they need off. Like what do you want to see this team accomplish over the last month?
I think I want to see them continue to go all out, right? Go all out and treat it like they're still chasing a playoff spot, which they technically are. And obviously you get to games where week 16, 17, 18, obviously if someone needs rest, give them rest. But I think last year in particular, and I know I keep referencing it, but peaking at the right time and just the importance of that. And again, they've found a lot of success this season, but I don't think anyone is going to say that this team is peaking right now. So doing whatever they have to on a day-to-day, week-to-week, game-to-game basis to make sure that they're as close to that as possible for the playoffs, I think needs to be above all else in this. And just one other, you know, outside thing I'll be watching, the run defense. Because that group has, you know, they've been pretty steady for much of the season, but the last few weeks, and against some dynamic running backs, Montgomery, Gibbs, Chain, McCaffrey, they've held up really well. And while the pass rush isn't quite there, if you can limit an opponent's ability on the ground, there's just a positive effect that spreads to the rest of the defense.
The defense is in such an interesting, you know, just sort of situation right now, because they just allowed 34 to Detroit in sort of their three biggest games. Philly, 34 points allowed. Minnesota, 31 points allowed. Detroit, 34 points allowed in the second meeting between the two. They are ninth in scoring defense, sixth in rushing yards per attempt allowed at four, only 4.1 yards allowed per attempt, which is again sixth best in the NFL, eighth in interceptions, first in fumble recoveries, fifth in forced fumbles. Like they're still, if I would have told you going into the season, they could be ninth in scoring defense, sixth in rush defense, eighth in interceptions, first in fumble recoveries. I think just about every single one of us would have said, like, where can I will sign, I will, you know, put blood on the dotted line if I need to, like, sign me the heck up for that outcome. Yet it still feels in some of these big games, especially, and after coming out against that loss against Detroit and maybe with some of the injuries right now, it still feels like they are a degree or two off, and it's going to have to figure out a way to be better in those big games if they do really want to be a contender come January.
Yeah, and with the run defense, I know we talked about the linebackers getting picked on in the passing game, but it's not a coincidence that the three games we just mentioned about them playing at a high level is the one where we've seen Quay Walker take off, and Isaiah McDuffie is still a solid run game contributor as well. So linebacker play a big contributor to that part as well, even though they're taking some lumps against the pass.
I was going to say linebacker also contributing on the pass defense side, so yes. You sometimes take the good with the bad, and again, they're going to have to figure that out, and hopefully Adrian Cooper can be somebody that kind of fixes some of those issues inherently when he gets back. All right, Paul, thank you so much. As always, this is absolutely awesome. I love doing this every single week. What do you got coming out on ESPN Lacrosse this week, and what can we look forward to?
Yeah, same, Andy. Talked about the consistency the Packers need to find, that specifically against their good opponents that they're facing, because again, Lions twice, Vikings, that's where they've really been hit in that regard. Zane Anderson, got the opportunity to talk to him on Monday in the locker room just about his stepping into that role and potentially might have to continue to fill a larger role depending on how the injury report shakes out. And then we'll get into our game preview, Seahawks, Packers, all that good stuff.
Looking forward to it. Paul's stuff is always the best. Plus, you got the YouTube channel back up, yes, and cooking, correct?
Yes, we do. We're rolling with it. So very creative channel name, Paul Brettle on YouTube. Hit like, hit subscribe. I do appreciate it.
Yeah, make sure to go check it out. It's awesome, and his writing is phenomenal every single time. If you're not making Paul part of your daily routine on all your Packer stuff, you are missing out. You can find him again on social media at Paul_Brettle. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Packaday Podcast. That's going to do it for Paul and I today. But until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.